Many of the political issues we struggle with today have their roots in the U.S. Constitution. Husband and wife team Cynthia and Sanford Levinson take us back to the creation of this historic document and discuss how contemporary problems were first introduced. Then they offer possible solutions. Cynthia Levinson is a children's book author. Sanford Levinson is a constitutional law scholar. They have joined forces to write a new book to encourage exploration and discussion for young and old readers alike. I spoke with Sanford Levinson about the challenge of being a constitutional law scholar and explaining these issues to young adults.
Well, putting to one side, you know, the challenge simply of writing in an accessible way, which my wife is very gifted at doing, and I'm probably not, I think the importance of it, and I say with complete honesty that of the now 6 or 7 books I've written, I think this is the most important one, that I think, you know, the cliche that we often use, the youngsters of today are the leaders of tomorrow, has the fortunate or unfortunate reality of being true. And there's a great debate among contemporary teachers or people in schools of education. My daughter teaches at the Harvard Grad School of Education about contemporary civic education and whether we're really doing a good job in educating kids about the fundamentals of American government and really preparing them, you know, to start voting when they're 18. In fact, one of the things that Cynthia and I discovered recently is that there's a 16-year-old running for governor in Kansas and a 13-year-old, believe it or not, who's running for governor in Vermont, partly because neither of those states has an age requirement. Unlike the national constitution, they have to be 35, obviously, to run for president. The 13-year-old is remarkably articulate. His platform, his critique, is actually worth listening to. But the really important thing is that both he and the 16-year-old in Kansas really, you know, you could describe them as political junkies if you want to, but they're really thinking hard and presumably talking to their classmates. And I think that's really, really important, that if kids get the impression that politics is simply boring, which I think is often the case, or that is, that's the impression they get, not that politics is in fact boring, or if they are taught that the only important thing about the Constitution is the Bill of Rights, which I think is often the message. And in a sense, it's very easy to teach kids about freedom of speech or some other issues, easy in the sense that you have to be a very bad teacher, in fact, not to generate an excited discussion where students, you know, will start shouting at one another about this and that. You really have to be more skilled to provoke discussions about the presidential veto, whether it really makes sense that Vermont and Massachusetts have the same number of senators in the U.S. Senate, same voting power, whether the Electoral College, which gave us Donald Trump, even though Hillary Clinton got almost 3 million more votes. You know, I think that a skilled teacher can get kids just as involved in those questions as they would get involved in discussions about hate speech and the like. And I think it's really, really important to get kids involved in these discussions precisely because these aspects of politics really do affect their lives. Whether you can get any legislation through Congress these days will affect their lives, will affect their prospects for health care, education. You can simply go through a long, long litany. And I think that one of the things that's true about current American politics is that across the political spectrum, left, right, and center, liberal and conservative, there is tremendous alienation from the national government. You know, the approval rate for Congress on a good day will be 15%, right, and often it's down to 10%. And I have to believe that kids absorb that from their parents, again, whether they're liberal parents or conservative parents may not be so important, and that one ought to get kids involved in this because we're really talking about their futures. And it really is possible, as with this 13-year-old from Vermont and the 16-year-old from Kansas, not that they're going to be elected to office, they're not, but that they actually might have interesting things to say.
The name of the book is Fault Lines in the Constitution, the Framers, Their Fights, and the Flaws That Affect Us Today. You do advocate in the book for a new constitutional convention, a prospect that could help mend some of those fault lines and mend some of those flaws. But you also point out in the book that certainly there are dangers that come with that proposition.
Right. In fact, our book concludes with a debate between my wife and myself. Up until then, it's written in one voice. The last chapter has two voices, and I will have to admit that my wife, like most of my family, most of my friends, most of my academic colleagues, really think the idea of a new constitutional convention is, if not out and out crazy, then at least not a very good idea. I obviously try to defend it. Not only do I not think it's crazy, but I think it is something that we very badly need. Because if we don't talk about some basic constitutional issues, particularly involving structures, not the Bill of Rights, but our basic structures, then the great temptation is to treat politics as a psychodrama of heroes and villains. And so we say, well, you know, the American system would be just fine if it weren't for the villainous, and then you can fill in the blank with whoever your chief villain might be. Whereas my view is that the explanation for the fact that Congress now for quite a few years has not been capable of passing legislation that really responds to what many, many Americans across the political spectrum might believe are the most important issues of the day is because of basic structural issues. It is the disproportionate power in the Senate enjoyed by small states like Vermont, even though given my own politics, I like Patrick Leahy and Bernie Sanders. That still doesn't justify Vermont, with 650,000 people, having the same power in the Senate as Texas, where I don't like the Texas senators, but we do have 26 million people, and it's hard to figure out why 650,000 should be the equal of 26 million in terms of the Senate, or that a single president can veto legislation that can run the hurdles set up by the American system of bicameralism. But we're not talking about these things. Instead, you know, the political campaigns take on this increasingly nasty personal tone. And then it leads to, from what my perspective, is a demagoguery of somebody like Donald Trump, who basically is playing the classic demagogue's move of saying the political system is broken, which it is, and only I can save it by basically acting like an authoritarian quasi-dictator. Now, you know, I don't think he's going to be able to get away with it, but I think that part of the explanation for the rise of the Trump phenomenon is the frustration with American politics. And so I'm very, very nostalgic for the 1912 presidential election, when two of the leading candidates, Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson, were serious constitutional reformers. And William Howard Taft was by far the most able defender of the old order. And so you really had a serious debate about the extent to which the Constitution needed change. And the decade of the teens brought us four really important constitutional amendments. And, you know, people really talked about what in the Constitution needed fixing. We don't do that anymore. We talk on Constitution Day about how wonderful the Constitution is rather than what its imperfections might be. And then we talk about the particular political leaders we think might in fact be our saviors and the ones who are the arch villains. And I think that is really ultimately unproductive and leads to the kind of hyperpolarization and fears, frankly, about the future of the country.
Sanford Levinson is the author of the new book, Fault Lines in the Constitution, The Framers, Their Fights, and the Flaws That Affect Us Today. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. A great pleasure
to have
you on the program. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.